When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Hi there, my name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made, to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Welcome to another podcast at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, State Representative Chris Taylor, who represents downtown Madison in the Near East Side. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've certainly had an interesting last couple of weeks, as well as...
I would say.
Have you ever walk up to your Republican colleagues and just ask them, how do you keep a straight face when you say some of the things you're saying publicly on motivation here? How do you keep a straight face?
Well, I have not asked them exactly that question, but something that comes close, like, really? You really think this is a good idea? And sometimes they just shrug their shoulders and smile. This, I'll tell you, Slide, these suite of bills were the brainchild of probably a lot of right-wing special interest groups, but the person who really pushed it through was Robin Voss. He had a lot of trouble with the Senate. There was, at one point last Wednesday morning now, there was a big delay. There's a 2.5-3 hour delay between 1:30 and 4:30 in the morning where he was attempting to, negotiate with the Senate, because I think at least some people over there thought this was a really bad idea. And so it did result in a big delay. But look, this is a absolute and total abuse of power. But Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald think they should not just be, controlling the legislature, but also the executive and also the Attorney General's office. It's really kind of mind-boggling. They certainly had a lot of chutzpah, as we would say, to push something like
that. No, you have to pronounce that like Michelle Bachman. Chutzpah.
Chutzpah.
No, she pronounced it chutzpah.
Chutzpah. Okay, no chutzpah. My husband would be extremely embarrassed if I said chutzpah.
So here's Robin Voss the other day in front of the cameras. Let me just see if we can get to this clip here.
That this is not something that we started only a matter of weeks ago. We've been talking about this for a while. Now, as Senator Fitzgerald has consistently said, legislative process and a lot of these issues are kind of inside baseball. But if you are in the legislature and you are in the executive branch, you want to make sure that the two are equal.
So it's just inside baseball, and all he's doing is trying to make things equal.
Yeah, so what he's doing is having unprecedented legislative power, and he's taking, on top of that, probably half the powers of the executive and half the powers of the attorney general. Is that equal? No, that's not equal.
Now, when you say, how do you quantify half?
Well, look, I mean, he is making it impossible for this governor to get out of or settle any lawsuit that the state's a plaintiff of. That is a huge, huge power that the governor has. In fact, that's one of the things Tony Evers ran on, that he would get the state out of this harmful lawsuit to repeal the Affordable Care Act and take away people's health care. That is a huge piece. That was a huge piece of his campaign. That was a huge piece of Josh Call's campaign as Attorney General, that he thought this lawsuit was not a good idea. And so, it's not exactly quantifying, only took half, but look, Robin Voss he has, it doesn't make any sense what he's saying. We wanted equal power. Well, they gave the governor a lot of power during their reign, during the dominance that we've seen. And what this does is take away all that power, but also take away more things from the executive. And who does Robin Voss give that power to? He gives it to himself. He gives it to the legislature. And so talking about this was just done to make the branches equal is absolutely a joke. It's a lie. He knows it's a lie. Robin Voss would not debate this bill on the floor, really. You know, we would have loved to debate this bill with Robin Voss. He barely made any comments about it. He didn't show up to his own hearing on the bill. He was too cowardly to show up in public and defend this bill. What Robin Voss did was what cowards do. It's after we had debated this bill on the floor for hours into the wee hours of the morning, then he goes and has a press conference. Because he knew that his message somehow, that he was making things more equal or trying to have equal power, that's baloney. Nobody believes that. He wants all power. He wants to be omnipotent. He wants to be the executive, the legislative branch, and even the judiciary. They infringed upon the power of the judiciary, too, which I think is a real problem. So what this is a power grab. What this is abuse of power, all to subvert the will of the people. Let me tell you the other thing that was crystal clear from listening to my Republican colleagues, and this is just so insulting to the people of this state, is they think they know better than the voters. And they made that point again and again and again, that somehow the voters had been incorrect, that the will of the voters to actually balance out the abuse of power we've seen from the Republicans and really all branches of government, that somehow that was wrong. And they were just trying to protect what they had. And the other message, honestly, that came out loud and clear is not just this total disregard for voters, but also that this was all about them. This is not about the people of the state. This is about these individual legislators holding on to power.
So whenever you talk about the will of the people, obviously Republicans talked about the will of the people when Scott Walker, who didn't campaign on stripping people of their collective bargaining rights, said, say, well, that was the will of the people. But, you know, it seems to me these two circumstances are different. The people that voted for Tony Evers in wide part were voting on a transparent agenda and not looking for anything extraordinary to strip anybody else of their rights or upset precedent in the state of Wisconsin. They were just talking about returning the state to some normalcy.
Well, and to some balance, because our state has been so out of whack. And honestly, the kind of reign of these Republican policymakers has really hurt the people of the state of Wisconsin. This is fundamentally different in a lot of ways from Act 10, in my opinion, because this is about taking away power from a branch of government and giving it to themselves. And that's what the legislators did who supported this. They infringed upon, and I think there probably will be lawsuits, you know, because certainly Robin Voss in these bills gave himself, and Scott Fitzgerald gave himself, the ability to hire as many attorneys as they want. And the taxpayers are paying for this. They could hire 20 law firms. They are attempting to staff up with attorneys so that they can wage legal war on this new governor and this new attorney general. But it was, in my opinion, it is very different than Act 10, because it is more about who has power in our three branches of government. And these people have no respect for separation of powers. In fact, on the floor, I mean, it's just amazing to me. They intimated, well, you can just ignore the ruling of a judge. That was Representative Nygren intimated that. He just said it, actually, in the Joint Finance Committee. You know, you just ignore what a judge rules.
Was that in reference to early voting?
Well, it was in reference to the fact that the Department of Public Instruction superintendent doesn't have to abide by what the governor says about rules that the Department of Public Instruction may implement because they're a constitutional, independent elected official. And if you remember, not to get too into the wonky details, the governor Walker and these Republican legislators really tried to say that DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, was subordinate to the governor, and the governor could just disregard rules that they wanted to pass to implement certain policies, and that they lost that in court. A judge said, no, you can't do that, governor. And so they said to me, well, look, you have, you know, now the governor has power to just ignore the DPI secretary. You can do what we did to you. And I said, no, you don't understand. There's a court order that prevents the governor from just treating DPI as a subordinate. But they don't, they just don't understand that. To them, it's all politics. So, and it is early voting, too, I brought up. You know, we have a court order saying similar restrictions like the ones the Republicans just passed in limiting early voting are not constitutional. You can't do it. And they go ahead and do it again. And so there is no respect for the balance of powers.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting on the limited, on the early voting thing. You would think rather than trying to prevent people in urban areas from voting early, they would find a way to facilitate to make it easier for people in rural parts of Wisconsin to vote early, expand the playing field. You know, we should have turnout at midterm elections that's is higher than presidential elections, because these are the races that actually affect people's lives
directly. Absolutely.
Directly, right?
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Here is let me just play a clip of Scott Walker here. Here's Scott Walker.
Legislature were elected not on a term that ended election day. They're elected on a term that ends in January, just like my term ends in January. And so we're going to look at things just like people expect us to serve a full four-year term.
Well, that is quite a contrast to what he was saying as Governor Doyle was leaving office in 2011.
Well, right. I mean, he wrote this whole letter that's circulating around. Governor Walker wrote a letter to Governor Doyle saying that basically cease and desist, do not take any action. And this was as the transition between these administrations occurred. And, you know, for the most part, Governor Doyle didn't take any action because there was some respect there and there was a precedent for this power transition should occur peacefully without this massive upheaval, without these power grabs that we're seeing. So certainly Governor Walker has certainly not thus far. Well, we'll see what he does with these bills, but I think there's absolutely no way he's not going to sign them since he was involved in negotiating them and since he supported more extreme versions of these bills. He supported even moving the presidential primary to March, which thankfully we got that out finally. But, you know, I was asked yesterday by a national reporter, well, do you think he's going to veto this? And I said, heck no, I don't think. He's not a moderating force here. This guy's governed as an extremist. And I don't think he's going to go out of office any differently.
Here is Majority Leader Jim Steinke from Kakana.
Really, the idea behind this is to get partisan elections away from nonpartisan elections. So as a former town chairman and I was on the county board, I ran for office in April. The last thing I want to do is run up against highly partisan races in April when these are really nonpartisan races. So that's the idea behind that.
But just 2 years ago, conservatives benefited when the Republican presidential primary coincided with a Supreme Court election and Rebecca Bradley won re-election for another 10 years in the court. So how can you turn around and say, well, now it doesn't make sense when it may hurt a conservative?
Well, I think that's exactly the point, is in the future, it could help Democrats, it could help Republicans. What we're saying is no matter who it helps, we shouldn't have those partisan elections during nonpartisan elections. So we want to align those more with the partisan primaries.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, nothing they say makes sense, honestly, regarding these bills. No, they, in 2016, Rebecca Bradley, they're very conservative. I would say probably one of the top conservatives on the state Supreme Court ran during the presidential primary where Republicans were having a, you know, and Democrats too, for that matter.
It was Ted Cruz's last stand.
That's right. That's right. So they had a very contested primary. They weren't saying a word about partisan versus nonpartisan. They've never said a word in 8 years about this issue. And now suddenly they have a very weak state Supreme Court justice who's never been a judge, has very, you know, no judicial experience. So he's now up for election, and they don't want, it's so interesting. They want less people to turn out. They don't like when people turn out to vote. And that really is the bottom line, and it sounds so cynical of me, and I'm not a cynic, but they have done everything in their power to make it harder for people to vote. And when people turn out in a midterm like they just did, which we had one of the highest turnout rates in the nation, they don't say how great that is or how we should keep going and expand, do everything we can to expand voting. They now try to restrict voting.
You know, in the years they won where there was huge turnouts in the Ring of Fire, I never, ever bemoaned the fact that Republicans turned out in high numbers. It would never even dawn on me that we would try to find a way to cut those numbers back. The way to win an election is to encourage people that are like-minded to turn out to vote, not to dissuade other people from voting. I want everybody to vote.
Everyone should vote. Everybody, and that is such a core, it shouldn't be just a core Democratic issue. It should be just a core issue for everybody, is making sure that people turn out to vote. But time and time again, my Republican colleagues have done everything they can to restrict access to voting. God, we heard a college student came and testified in front of the Joint Finance Committee against this restriction on early voting. And he went through the litany of what he had to do to vote here. And there are like 12 steps he had to go through before he got to vote. And, you know, he was comparing it to his home state where, you know, you can just go vote. And they don't have any problems. So it's been a constant effort to undermine the ability to vote by my Republican colleagues. And they certainly did not like the fact. In fact, none of them had anything complimentary to say about the turnout that we just had in a midterm. And interestingly enough, early voting, we track this, and there's a graph that shows who benefited, what communities benefited the most. And it was some of the Republican communities that had the biggest benefit from early voting. Alberta Darling's district had a huge benefit from early voting. And so you think, well, gosh, it didn't just help Democrats, this having, you know, extended early voting. It helped Republicans who are now trying to take it away.
We'll take a break. Chris Taylor with us at SliceOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated, our friends at Madison Firefighters Local 311, and Madison Teamsters Local 695. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, this isn't just happening in Madison. It's happening in Lansing, Michigan. It's happened in Raleigh, North Carolina. Obviously, you saw what happened with the race for governor in Georgia, where Stacey Abrams, who, by the way, was a former Madison resident, almost got elected governor of Georgia. So you see what's going on. Can you tell me, and all, you know, you go to these ALEC conferences, any legislator can join them, so you go and get a good view of how they behave. Can you tell me, does ALEC have anything to do with some of the efforts that are going on to suppress the vote nationwide?
I think they do, but I have to say, I have not heard them in any of the annual conferences that I go to explicitly talk about it. But the principles that ALEC promotes, which is restricting voting and futzing with who can vote, that is kind of a foundational principle in ALEC. In fact, you can go back to see people who led the charge in ALEC saying things like, we don't want everybody to vote. That's not what we want, and that's not what they wanted. So they have promoted these voter suppression laws, so that's very ALEC. The thing that I do see as being kind of tying this movement together is in every state there is a right-wing think tank, and those think tanks are networked together in an organization called the States Policy Network. They are a very big player in ALEC. And it's interesting that where you had this push, certainly in Michigan and Wisconsin, you have very, very active right-wing think tanks. So in Michigan, you have the Mackinac Institute. They led the charge in going after collective bargaining rights and right to work. That institute, they are speakers all the time at ALEC talking about taking away workers' rights. So what you do have in states is these very strong right-wing think tanks that are all working together. They are members of ALEC, most of them. And so I think that is how ALEC is involved with this, is that we know in these states these right-wing think tanks are networked together, they're communicating with each other, they're very strong. I mean, here in Wisconsin, we have two. We have the MacGyver Institute, and we have the Wisconsin Public Policy Institute, which is now, I believe, the Badger Institute. And then we have another conservative right-wing law firm, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which I'm sure was involved.
Oh, Rick Essenberg.
Crafting. Yeah, Rick Eisen was, I'm sure, involved in crafting these bills as well.
So we see this effort, and we see what's, you know, the Republicans obviously have a demographic problem, and Donald Trump has only exacerbated that. And yet in Wisconsin, because of gerrymandering, the Democrats are sort of stuck in the mud in legislative seats, but not just because of gerrymandering, partly because of population, concentration among Democrats in urban areas, and the huge sums of money all these outside interest groups have. I mean, how much money was spent against Chris Marion to turn her into something that didn't even remotely resemble Chris Marion?
Right. And I don't even know the totals yet in that race, because so much what one of the things that the Republican legislators did is gut our disclosure laws here in Wisconsin. And so it's very difficult. It's harder than ever. They don't want people tracking who's spending what money in these races. But probably she was outspent. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 10 to 1, you know, by huge amounts, double digit amounts. And they make these candidates into people that they don't even recognize them. They, you know, they're individual candidates. By the time they're done, it's like you don't even know who this person is, and this person is not, you know, they create somebody else, and that's how they do it. So you have that situation going on with the mountains of cash. You have gerrymandering. And we do have to do more work in particular, I think, in some of these suburban areas. The ring around Milwaukee, the seat that the assembly did pick up, was a suburban Milwaukee seat.
Mm-hmm. Leah Vukmir's old assembly seat.
Yeah, Leah Vukmir's old assembly
seat.
And
that's a very gerrymandered seat.
And that's for gerrymandered, yeah? Absolutely. And then you have, you know, we had a great candidate running against Dale Cuyanga, and she came close. You know, it wasn't too far off. Then you have opportunities. Democrats do have opportunities in parts of the state. Rural pickup seats are very difficult for a lot of reasons, but one of the big reasons is how they've been gerrymandered.
Right.
But we do have opportunities. You look up in where Patty Shachner won in the, you know, northwest part of the state. there's real opportunities up there. And so I think for going into 2020, Democrats really just have to focus and be very intent. I think picking up these rural seats is going to be very difficult until we have new districts. But there are absolutely more suburban seats that can be picked up. And so we have to be a lot more strategic about where we're focusing and maybe not focus so broadly, quite frankly.
How do you see things playing out here the next couple of years? How does this change life? Having a Democratic governor, how does it change your activities in the Capitol? How does it change the power balance at all in the legislature, even though the numbers aren't there? How do you see this playing out?
I do think that, you know, unfortunately, this is my big disappointment with these horrible lame duck bills is I was actually looking very forward, and I still am to some extent, but I'm less optimistic about having a little more power, having some power because we've had none, in terms of trying to identify issues that should be bipartisan that now maybe we can make sure they are, like medical marijuana, to trying to push that for ever since I've been in the legislature, and we had referendum on the issue. They passed everywhere to legalize medical marijuana. So that was an issue, you know, it will still be pushing really hard to try to get passed. But I think what it really showed is that the leadership, Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald, and I'm not letting anybody off the hook who voted for these horrible bills, but they're going to engage in all kinds of very extreme tactics to make it much more difficult for the governor to govern and much more difficult at the end of the day for our government to function. And so that is going to be a constant theme. I also think another constant theme that we're going to see is constant litigation. Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald now can intervene in any case, any state case that's brought. The legislature has to approve any settlement that the state, for a case that the state brings. So, for instance, the Department of Justice brings enforcement actions against polluters. They bring consumer actions when consumers are defrauded or there's some other kind of bad thing that consumers experience from a company. So they're always bringing cases. I think that there's hundreds of civil cases right now that the state has brought. And so in every single instance, the Joint Finance Committee, where I serve, is going to have to approve every single settlement in those cases. I mean, this is unprecedented. I've never heard anything like this passed by any state. So it's going to be just much harder. I think we're going to kind of slow to a, you know, it's going to slow down the state's ability to function, the state's ability to settle disputes. And so I think a lot of litigation and a lot of monkey business from Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald we can expect. That doesn't mean, however, we don't have opportunities with other Republican legislators to try to reach common ground on transportation, on criminal justice reform, on things like medical marijuana, which you can't deny the vast majority of people support because we've had advisory.
Well, the majority of the people support recreational use for marijuana.
You know, absolutely.
Wisconsin's becoming a bit of an island.
Well, we are, but, you know, absolutely, there's a majority that supports that. But there's a huge supermajority that supports medical marijuana. So, you know, I'm hopeful, I'm still hopeful that we can find some areas like this to work together. But the actions of Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald has really tainted and once again created a very toxic environment in Madison. And that's their MO. They seem to love these horrible struggles, and they seem to create a lot of conflict. And so I so wish that my Republican colleagues would elect a different leader that could actually help us, you know, be a facilitator in reaching compromise and not a constant agitator. And she just wants to keep up the struggles and the partisanship. These leaders, Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald, they should go.
Let me ask you about Robin Voss and the way he operates his fiefdom. I can't tell you how many Republicans I've heard from that have quite a raised eyebrow in how he raises money from lobbyists and whether everything is legal that's going on in the pay-for-play scheme that's going on.
Yeah, I suspect if it was looked at closely, it would not be legal how he raises money and what he does. Look, there's a lot of corruption in the state legislature. There was a lot of corruption by Scott Walker. These were corrupt individuals. They were unethical, and they would really, there seemed to be no boundaries to them using their power to whether it be raising money or creating all of these constant political firestorms. So that's how they use their power. I think there is a lot of unethical behavior going on, and no one wants to speak about it. It's hard to get, you know, you hear this from lobbyists kind of in whispers. Nobody wants to go on the record. But I suspect that things that happened that were that caused Scott Jensen and Chuck Kawala to be prosecuted are still happening in the state legislature, and we need, you know, somebody needs to speak out about it.
Well, we do have a new sheriff at the Justice Department.
We do have a new
attorney general.
The U.S. attorney general. Yeah.
A new state attorney general. Yeah, right.
Oh, absolutely. And this should be, you know, it's much harder now to look at political corruption because of what happened with the John Doe investigation, and politicians exempted themselves from these investigations. So they're much harder to do, but certainly attorney general could look at them if there was evidence, if someone was willing to come forward and talk about them. But you hear it too. You hear all the time that there's very unethical.
This is from Republicans.
Probably illegal. Yes, I know, but nobody's willing to come out and speak about it. We all know it's happening, but nobody, you know, and I don't have direct knowledge of it. This is what you hear. But people, certainly, I've heard it enough from people that there's this requirement that you have to give Republicans five times the amount you give Democrats. You know, these kind of
litmus
tests that Robin Voss is imposing. I know, it's sick and it's wrong, but this is the kind of leader that these Republicans elect. You know, we really need new leadership on the Republican side. We really do. We would be so much more effective without the toxic tactics of Robin Voss.
Hang on the line for just a sec. Chris Taylor with us. Thanks for coming on Sly's Office today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.